I am so honored and grateful to be here, and I hope that it has been a help and a benefit to you guys. Let me give you this. If you want to write down my email address, if you ever have a question about church planning or something that I can help you with, don't hesitate to give me a call. Here it is. It's CTS. Those are my initials. CTS at Church Planting America. One word, churchplantingamerica.org. CTS at churchplantingamerica.org. And just if you do write me, mention that you're from West Coast Baptist College. That'll help frame it in my mind, because I'm out and about all over, and sometimes people say, oh, I met you. Well, I'm trying to figure out where. So give me your name and just let me know where you're from, and that just kind of helps me think it through a little bit. All right, we're going to talk in this last workshop session on the challenges of church planting. And I was thinking about this verse of Scripture about challenges. Psalm 34, verse 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous. The reality is there are challenges. I've never done anything in my life more challenging than planting a church. It's tough. It's hard. I mean, if you have the mindset that this is an easy task, you're really, really mistaken. It's a lot of work, and there are a lot of challenges and a lot of disappointments. But the verse goes on to say, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. And aren't you grateful for that? See, we can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth us. Greater is he who is in us than he who is in the world. And so we can rise above those challenges by God's grace. We can deal with those challenges. But we have to go in realizing there will be challenges. It's part of it. And so let's talk about some of those challenges. Notice the quote at the top of the page. Your greatest learning comes from the course of life offering the greatest challenges. In other words, it's during those challenging times or periods in life when we're stretched that we really do learn some things that we couldn't learn any other way. And so while initially we might repel from that, we should really welcome it. Because it is during those seasons of life that God can teach us some lessons that we couldn't learn any other way. And so that's part of the grooming process, part of the refining process that God has for us to make us into the image of His Son, to make us the preacher, the pastor that He wants us to become, the man of God that He wants us to become. And I don't wake up in the morning saying, God, send a bunch of challenges into my life. I don't pray that way. But I know they're coming. And when they come, I say, Lord, help me to learn the lesson. Help me to get the message. Help me to grow through the experience so that I can become what you want me to become, so that I can accomplish what I need to accomplish. And I know you know this truth, but let me just say, being is far more important than doing. We have to be what God wants us to be, then we can do what God wants us to do. If we put the emphasis on doing, we're going to be in trouble. We've got to put the emphasis on being. Now, let's kind of divide our discussion today into two segments. One would be personal challenges. The second is process challenges. So let's talk quickly about some personal challenges. And I know I've spoken to this issue, but I want to bring it up one more time. And that is the challenge of knowing for certain that it is God's perfect will for you to plant a church. Knowing for certain. Launching out to plant a church without knowing for certain that it's God's will spell disaster. Because when those conflicts come and disappointments come and problems arise, you're going to be sitting there thinking, is this what God really wants for my life? And you're going to be looking for the exit sign every opportunity. You've got to know this is it. And you just dig down and learn those lessons and realize it's okay. It may be heartbreaking, it may be stretching, it may be painful, but that's okay because I know that I'm in the right place doing what God wants me to do. Now, I'm going to just play a little bit off that word planters and kind of share with you some characteristics of a good church planter, a biblical church planter, a successful church planter. So planters, P, they are passionate about God and church planting. If you're going to plant a church, you have to be passionate about God. How can you tell people about Him if you're not passionate about Him? And passionate about church planting. Again, if you're just doing this because, you know, there's nothing else to do, you're in trouble. You got to be passionate about it. You get up in the morning excited about planting a church. You go to bed at night with it on your heart. You're passionate. I travel a lot, as does Dr. Getch and Dr. Chaplin. I promise you, we meet preachers all the time who are lacking in passion. They're drawing a paycheck. They're comfortable. They're just getting by. We need passion. Passion in the pulpit. Passion in our prayer closet. Passion when we're out knocking on doors. We need passion. And I think it's lacking so often in our hearts and our churches. Secondly, church planters are leaders and learners. You have to be able to lead. You have to be able to look people in the eye and kindly but yet deliberately say, this is where we're going. This is what we're doing. This is who we are. Because people are going to push you in every direction. And by the way, everybody has a good idea. The first church we planted in the city of Chicago, or right outside one of the suburban areas in Chicago, within a year I had 9 men who had been deacons in other Baptist churches that gravitated to our church. And they gravitated there because they wanted some passion. But after a while, once they got in there, a few of them started to say to me, well, now, you know, preacher, that's not how we did it back at the old church. And after a while, I kind of listened to that. And then they kept it up and kept it up and kept it up. And I remember, and these guys were old enough to be my father and in some cases grandfather. And without being disrespectful, but firmly I said, you know what? Maybe you need to go back to the old church because that's not who we are. And that's not where we're going. And that's what a leader has to do sometimes. But then you're also a learner. You don't want to get to the point where you believe you know everything. In fact, when we planted that first church, my goodness, and I confessed a little bit to you in chapel the other day, there's a whole lot I didn't know. There's a whole lot I don't know now. We're ever learning. That's why you're reading, and that's why you come to meetings like this, and the conference here that is the spiritual conference that's held in June each year. Why? So that you can constantly learn and grow. Then notice, A, church planters are accountable to the sending church. You got to be accountable to that sending church. That's biblical. Then N, they're noticeable. They have a noticeable and obvious love for his wife and children. I talked about that the other day. Noticeable and obvious love for his wife and children. Nobody in that congregation should wonder, does the pastor really love his family? I mean, that should not even be in their mind. It should be very, very clear that you are madly in love with your wife and that you love your children. Talented and spiritually gifted for church planting. Now, we're all talented and gifted in different ways. Some are musically gifted. Some are administratively gifted. But we have to have what's required to get the job done in church planting. Then E, experienced and educated. I would not recommend that you graduate from this school with a bachelor's degree and launch out as a young guy and go start a church. I'd recommend you go work for a good pastor. Learn some things. Get some maturity. Get some experience. If you're planning to further your education, jump on it. Be as prepared as possible when you plant that church. Then R, relational. with people, particularly the unsaved. Dr. R. asked me the other day in the presence of the other two men, that the young men that are here participating in the conference, we were to lunch, he asked me what three things I would pass down to them. The first thing I said is building relationships. The importance of building relationships. You're not going to win people to Christ successfully over the long term if you don't know how to build relationships. And you're not going to mentor people if you don't know how to build relationships. You have to do that. And then obviously, S, spiritual and self-disciplined. Nobody's going to be telling you to get out of the bed in the morning. Your wife may be telling you, but you probably won't listen to her. You got to have self-discipline. Nobody's going to be telling you, hey, you better get to that prayer closet. Nobody's going to be telling you, it's study time, it's soul winning time. You got to have some discipline to get out there and do it. Discipline. It's important. So there's personal challenge. Then here's a second one, B. This is so critical. The challenge of comparison. When you're planting a church, the tendency is to compare what you're doing with what some other church planter is doing. You know, Paul said in 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 12, to compare ourselves one to another is not wise. It's just not wise. As God's, look at point one on your outline, as God's unique creation, you have different lessons to learn, weaknesses to overcome. Your journey will differ from another church planter's journey. Number two, comparison most often creates one of two things, pride or discouragement. See, if you're doing a little bit better than the guy you're comparing yourself to, the tendency is to get puffed up. The tendency is to be proud. But if you're falling behind, let's say you go out and plant churches together, you know, he in one city, you in another city, and you're good buddies, and you go off and do this, and you call back and forth, how you doing, and you had 40 and he had 80. Next week you call back and you have 35 and he had 90. It's easy to get discouraged. I'm not saying you can't communicate with other church planters. You need to. But be careful about what you talk about. Be careful about being in competition. That's not what it's about. That's not the goal. The goal is to fellowship with one another, pray for one another, encourage one another, lift up one another. It's not a contest between church planters. This community and this community are completely different. What you're going to go through and what he's going to go through are completely different. His gifts and your gifts and his challenges and your challenges. I mean, it's just different. Don't be caught up in comparing yourself all the time, because it's either going to run you down that road of being haughty and proud, or it's going to run you down that road of being discouraged. Thirdly, the challenge of a barren spiritual life. Now, I'll tell you, that's a challenge on a personal level. When you plant a church, there are so many things you have to attend to. And unless you go with a team, which is desirable and ideal, where you can download some tasks and get some people to help you, and even at that, there's going to be so many things to care for, you are going to focus on the incidentals instead of the essentials. We've got to run here, we've got to run here, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And you'll get drained by all of that. And what will happen in your life is you'll get barren spiritually. And what we do, and not even know that we do it, is we exchange God for the work of God. And we're engaged in the work of God, serving the Lord, and we think we're okay because we're doing that. And somewhere along the journey, we lost God in our daily life. Somewhere along the journey, instead of having our time with the Lord every day, or a significant time with God every day, we've kind of minimized that because we've got to run to the printer. We've got to run here. We've got to run there. We've got a meeting with this. We got some. Listen, this has to be the priority. One writer stated, we are inclined to believe that the most publicly active person is also the most privately spiritual. A.W. Tozer warned, beware of the barrenness of a busy life. Beware of the barrenness of a busy life. That is a challenge. Everybody calling for your time and attention. And by the way, most of the people you reach in a new church are needy people. They're needy people. They're lost people. Their life's a wreck. I mean, they have violated every biblical principle for 30 or 40 years. They get saved, thank God. And I mean, it's a disaster. Their finances, their marriage, their parenting, their children. And I mean, they need help. And they need it now. And you're the one they call on. And you not only have one of those families, but two or five or ten. And if you're not careful, you're going to be so drained because you're giving out and giving out and giving out and giving out. Turn to Luke chapter 8 for just a moment. You remember this passage, and it's probably that's not the passage. Let me find it here. I didn't have it written down. Let's see if I can locate it real quickly. I can't put my hands on it right now. Well, we'll let that go. Maybe the Lord will bring it to my mind. Can't bring it up. We'll just let that go. Can't find it. The challenge D, the challenge of effective time management. Effective time management. Managing your time is a challenge. Enormous, enormous challenge. You have family responsibilities. You have sermon preparation. You have soul winning. You have counseling as the church grows. You have discipleship. We have administration. I mean, there's just planning. I mean, the list goes on. So many things. And you've got to manage that. Some of you are going to be gifted that way, and it's going to be far easier for you. You have that administrative gift. It's just natural. You're organizers. You think that way. And when a project comes up or a task comes up, you think one, two, three, four. It just works. It just flows. Others, it's laborious. It's harder to deal with it. It's much more strenuous. But nonetheless, it has to be done. It has to be done. So managing your time. I like this statement. If you don't have the time to do it right, where will you find the time to do it over? So the idea of, okay, we're going to just get by this time. If you mess up and don't do it right, how in the world are you going to get the right time to do it over? It's going to be a problem. So managing your time, making sure your family, as I spoke on yesterday, has the appropriate time and attention in your life, critical. Obviously, your time alone with God, critical. Sermon preparation, critical. Talked the other day about having 50 messages. I'm working on a series of books now. With each one has 10 annotated sermon outlines. There's 10 on prayer, 10 on the Word of God, 10 on holidays, 10 on Christian living, 10 on salvation, 10 on the church. When it's all done, there'll be a series of 10 of those, so 100 messages, so a church planner can grab those 100 annotated outlines and at least he's got something to begin to work with and adjust. It's going to be an enormous help for some guy. I think I've got four of those done at this time. You know, I'm not silly enough to think somebody's going to grab that and preach exactly those outlines, but it gives somebody a head start, because that grind of preaching is really tough when you're out there trying to fit all these pieces together. So that time management issue. Then we have, secondly, process challenges. Process challenges. And I would say the challenge of clear and open communication with your sending church pastor. And there's really two questions. The first question is, what are your expectations? And the second question is, what are his expectations? Don't launch into this without having those questions answered. What are your expectations? What are his expectations? And I've been on both sides of it. Working with church planters, I hear church planters, I wouldn't say the word complain, but they're just moaning over, well, I thought my sending church would help me with this. I thought my sending church would help me with this. And then I hear it from the pastor of the sending church. And they're saying, wow, we've done this and this and this, but they're not reporting to us, or they're not calling as often as they should, or we don't know what's going on at that church. And the problem is a lack of communication. They're not communicating. So what is occurring is friction is building between the sending church pastor and the church planter. And at some point, there's going to be a conflict, an explosion that takes place. So the challenge is to deal with that up front. It can be any number of things. Methodology, philosophy, whatever. Make sure that you talk through those issues. How often does that sending church pastor want to meet with you? How frequently does he want to report? How often would he like to come and visit the church and see firsthand? How often would he like you to come back and report to his congregation, the sending church congregation? Just begin to list things that you want to discuss with him so that the air is clear and there's no conflict whatsoever. Now, sometimes you have just really an intimate relationship with that sending church pastor and you're good. They're open communication, it flows, there's no problem. But some cases that doesn't happen. And so realize that can be problematic if you don't deal with it. And make sure that the air is clear and that you really understand what it is that he expects. And then share what you would like from him. And I've learned this. Many sending church pastors do not realize what responsibility they have in planning a church. And it may be because they've never planted a church. They've never, out of their congregation, ever birthed a church. So they're not thinking about, you may think, boy, they're going to support me at $1,000 a month. He's thinking, we're going to send you $50 a month. So the first check comes and you run to the mailbox thinking you're getting that $1,000. You're gravely disappointed when you open that envelope. Now we've got potential for bitterness to creep into that relationship. So just get all that settled up front, and it's going to make an enormous difference in how you function. The second challenge, of course, is always the challenge of funding. Funding, support. That was spoken to this week in one session, and I'm so grateful. Dr. Goetsch asked one of the young men to deal with that subject. And some of you, I believe, were in that session, of course, and that is very, very helpful. If you were not in that session, then get the notes, because that is really, really critical that you have enough money. Churches often, new churches fail because they don't have resources. They don't have the money. Funding. So you've got a couple of options. Number one, you raise mission support. You go out as any missionary would go out and raise support. Deputation. And that, you know, that can take a while. It may be as few as, you know, a few months, but in most cases, it's beyond that. Depending on what contacts you might have, depending on how many pastors you know or how many pastors your sending church pastor knows. You know, it can move along pretty quickly. But in some cases, it may take a while. But that's an option. The second is to work full-time. Move to the city and work full-time. Let me suggest that's really not a good option. It's not a good option because now you're factoring 40 hours into your schedule with all of the other responsibilities you have as a father and a husband and a church planner. That's pretty tough. It really is. The third is combine the two. Maybe you raise enough support to kind of get you by, and then you get a part-time job to kind of supplement that. That can work, and there is a benefit to that in that if this is a completely new community to you, getting into the workforce even a day or two a week can help you meet people, can help you build some relationships with unsaved people, can help you meet folks that you would not ordinarily meet. So you have to really ascertain from God what direction he would have you to go with this. But obviously, if you can get out there and raise that support before you go, it's going to free you up to just focus on that ministry so wholeheartedly. I would advise you to do that. Most guys run that support through their sending church. Others run it through a mission agency. But you need some help trying to figure out how to get that done. Get with an experienced church planner who has done that, who has accomplished that. Or I can help you with that. Dr. Ermler can help with that. We can help you figure out how to get that accomplished. The third one is the challenge of finding and securing the correct meeting location. When you go to a new growth area, the options are few. You don't have older buildings to, you know, unoccupied space. It's really a challenge. And I know, again, this was spoken to a couple of times in some other sessions. And I'm kind of saying this both initially and then ultimately. So initially when you're trying to just get up and going, and then ultimately as you're looking for a more permanent spot, just here are 12 areas that are of concern. But think about this kind of initially. Number one, visibility. And I didn't write these in order. I just as they came to my heart. Visibility. Is this a site that can be seen easily? Visibility. Then we have accessibility. Can people get to it? I mean, you can have a wonderful spot, wonderful space, but if they can't get to it, if they have to make 101 turns to try to get to the place, you know, unsaved people are going to grow weary of that. You know, committed Christians are going to get there, but people that are lost, that may be too laborious for them to even make the journey. Then size. I mean, clearly that's important. Is it large enough for you to function? Can you do it? Cost. I mean, bottom line is you have to be able to pay for it. So what is the cost? Cleanliness. One of the reasons why starting in a school, if possible, and I know some districts have certain standards that allow or disallow, certain states do in various ways. But one good thing is generally schools are clean. That's taken care of. You don't have to worry about that. Storage space. Do they allow you any storage space? Location. I mean, is it a safe neighborhood? Is it somewhere where people would want to go, park their car, walk if they have to get there? Are they going to feel threatened? Is it a place that they would have that concern? Reputation. Sometimes there's buildings, church buildings even, that are up for sale. But the reputation of that building goes with it at least for a while in that neighborhood or whatever that building may be. Think that through. Parking. Is there adequate parking? Parking's a big deal. In inner cities, that's a different world. I pastored a downtown church in St. Paul, Minnesota. We had 18 parking spots. 18. Our record attendance was 2,206. 18 parking spots. So they were on the street. We leased this lot here. We leased this lot here. We leased this lot here. I mean, we did everything creatively as we could possibly do to provide adequate parking. But you're in a downtown situation. You don't have space. I do an enormous amount of ministry in New York City. I used to go 6 and 7 times every year there. I don't go nearly that much now, but I still go frequently. And it's, you know, to talk about parking there is really a non-issue. There is none. If a church has 1 or 2 parking spaces off street, they're happy. And I'm sure that's the case in any large urban city. So parking, though, is an issue in many places. Security, I talked on signage. You know, can you put signs out? Is that possible? Then, of course, appearance of the facility. What does it look like? Is it eye-appealing? Is it run down? Is it junky? Can you fix it up? Will it cost you a lot of money to do that? All of those things are important as you analyze. And again, I know Dr. Ermler spoke about the place and probably covered a good portion of what I've just said very quickly. Then D, the challenge of people leaving. Once you're up and running, it would be a wonderful thing if everybody that got on the bus stayed on the bus. But it's not going to happen. In fact, if you'll notice, the people you start with won't be the people you end with. At least not entirely. It's amazing how God brings certain people for a certain period of time. And then for whatever reason, some of those people just pull out. Some people are attracted to the concept, to the excitement, to the pioneering spirit of a new church. But they've never done it. They've not counted the cost. They jump in. It's really thrilling for a few months or even a couple of years. But after a while, it's not so exciting anymore. And they're out the door. Or they come and they think they understand what an independent Baptist church is. They think they understand what a soul-winning church is. They think they understand what a fundamental church is with standards, but they really don't. And so they're in for a while, but then they're out the door. So the reality is some people won't make the journey. When they leave, now I would say there are some cases that when they leave, it may be a blessing. But I would say most of the time, it can be a heartache. It hurts. Particularly people that you have led to Jesus Christ. You've discipled. It's hard. It hurts. And that is a challenge to watch these people that you have poured your soul into go down the road somewhere else, or maybe leave because they're being relocated, no choice of theirs, so to speak. It's just tough. You get them to a point of maturity and they start to serve and they're faithful and they're committed and then boom, they're gone for whatever reason. That's a hard thing. Very hard. And you can grow discouraged through that. You have to go into church planning realizing it's going to happen. You don't want it to happen, but it will happen. So expect that at some point. And don't allow that to so shake you, your foundation, that you want to give up just because good people walk out the door. E, this I believe is one of the greatest challenges we face, and unfortunately I don't think we do very well at it, and that is the challenge of recruiting and training workers and leaders. Workers and leaders. Now here's the point. No matter how gifted, talented, educated, experienced, passionate you are, at some point you're going to max out. You may have a lot of energy. You may need just very little sleep. But at some point you're going to max out. You have to have help. You have to have people that will come and help. Now, if you can get some folks initially to help as a team, we talked about that, that's wonderful. But even as the church grows, the church has to constantly be training workers and leaders. It has to be, it just has to be part of your philosophy of ministry from the beginning. This is a priority, to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. Ephesians 4:11. It's part of it. We're going to do this. It's our strategic plan to do this. That's why the deacons were appointed in Acts 6. The church grew. When growth takes place, people grumble. We see it in the book of Acts. It just happens. The church multiplies, people murmur. It happens. So we have to lift up leaders. We have to train workers to take the place. And there are areas where this, of course, is important. Obviously, if you're in a facility where every week you have to set up and take down, that's a big area. Working with children, that's a big area. Nursery care, child care, that's a big area. Music, if you're not gifted in that particular area, that's a big area. There's just so many areas where you need help, and you really have to work hard. Soul winning is a big area. Discipling is a big area. So many of these are critical, critical areas. So you have to realize this is part of our strategy. From the very beginning, we're working to train workers and leaders. And you have your eye out for people that are potential workers and leaders in different areas. And develop, as we talked about on Wednesday, strategies on how we can accomplish that. Then lastly, the challenge of securing a permanent building. And that is an enormous challenge, particularly in a state like California, where costs are so high, or metropolitan areas where costs are so high. It's not easy. Getting a permanent facility is important for three reasons. More than three, but I'm just going to give you three. One, it projects stability and permanence. When you get a building and everybody knows you're there, that sends this image not only to your members, your converts, but to people in the community: we're here to stay. This means stability. We're here permanently. We're not going to flow out of town next week. The second reason, it provides 24/7 usage and control. You're going to be able to utilize that building every day and control how it's used. So if you want classes here, put a nursery here, enlarge this or take this down or whatever it may be, you have that opportunity. You do that because it's your facility. And then an enormous one is it eliminates the setup and takedown process. It eliminates that setup and takedown process, which really is such a tiring, tiring process. It can wear people out. Here you've got this trailer filled with all your nursery equipment, all your children's equipment, your music equipment, hymn books, everything, pulpit, everything's in this trailer. You back it up, you unload it, set everything up, pack it up after Wednesday night, unload it, pack it up. I mean, you do that week in, week out, year in, year out. It'll wear you down. And it'll wear the people that are helping you out. That's why you need that worker base. Those are things people can do. They don't have to have deep Bible knowledge to help with that. But those are entry-level positions that can take a big burden off of you. You get a good organizer, somebody who's a good leader, and they can really, really help with that process. But getting into a permanent facility really takes that burden off, and it's an enormous building. Those people then can be utilized in other ministries and other capacities of service. Well, again, thank you so much for your attention. It's been a delight to be here and to be part of this conference. I hope it's been helpful and beneficial. all of the speakers and all of the sessions. It's a joy. Thank you, Dr. Getz.